The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
And Conor Faulkner, transport commentator and consultant to the RIAC. Good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Hi.
Now, the Road Safety Authority are having a conference this week where driver distraction is their big theme.
Yeah, it's Road Safety Week, and they're majoring on driver distraction because, in one level, almost every crash that occurs involves a human error of some sort. It's rare for it to be a pure mechanical error, and all of those human errors are, in some sense, a moment of distraction. You know, the driver might be driving too fast in the first instance. Driver might be drinking, but it's that distractive moment.
Shafts of sunlight coming from the west in the evenings or in the east in the mornings, that kind of thing.
A momentary lapse. Your phone goes off and you check a message. You glance away for just a heartbeat, and it's those distractive moments that cause the crashes. And now they're releasing a few bits of material during the week, I guess, just to help them promote. And they've produced some interesting reports on pedestrian deaths and injuries over the last 10 years. And it's quite insightful. I mean, they've compared it on a European level. And I was involved in this a little bit about maybe 8 or 9 years ago. There was a road safety conference about it. And it's how to accurately compare data from different European countries using hospital admission data as well as just police forces. Yeah. Countries everywhere just use police force reports as their main data source, but they're often wrong. And what you see is that the Garda reports underreport serious injuries by a factor of about 10%, which is
because someone who's involved in a road traffic accident, for example, someone who fell into the roadway, and I see that those aged 75 years and more have the greatest proportionate share, 23%
of deaths. Yeah,
and they may just have fallen in the way, got a bang of a car, and they ended up with an injury that killed them, but that mightn't be reported to the Gardaí because it's an accident, pure and simple.
Yeah, but I think what that tells us is that elderly people are overrepresented in deaths in accidents of a given severity. They're less likely to survive. You see children, for example, on the same statistic, children under 15 are 21% of those serious injuries. Mm. So young children are overrepresented in serious injuries. I guess that tells you as you get old and frail, you become more vulnerable. Mm. But a lot of these pedestrian deaths are in urban areas, and really, they're all preventable. It should never happen.
It's 52%. Of fatalities in pedestrians occurred on urban roads, and 89% of serious injuries to pedestrians. And the characterization is it's late at night, someone's not wearing high vis, walking along a country road with no footpath, and that's where they happen. This tells you a different story.
It tells you not. It tells you they're biased towards urban areas. And that's even if you wait for population. Obviously, you're going to see more in Dublin than elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But even if you wait for population, it's a bit more of an urban phenomenon than you might have thought. But nevertheless, as I say, they're easily avoidable deaths. There's also a noticeable peak at this time of the year. October to December represents 34% of the serious injuries that occur. So that's a sort of a heavy weighting. And look, I cycled in this morning. The roads have become dangerous. They're wet, they're greasy, it's dark.
The leaves are down.
Cyclists are often poorly lit, and pedestrians are doing those pedestrian habits. They're stepping out right in front. If you've got your collar turned up against the rain and you step out onto a cycle path,
and people are wearing their earbuds.
Yeah.
They hear nothing approaching.
And staring at phones, and all of those, I would suggest, characteristically urban behaviours. And I think they've got to be feeding into it. I know the RSA are talking about distracted drivers, but I was going to say those moments of distraction, I think, often come from the pedestrians themselves. So if you have somebody who's walking down the street, looking at their mobile phone with earbuds in, they step straight out in front of a bus without looking. It's hard to know what the fix for that is in terms of policing or engineering.
I mean,
they literally are
living in a world of their own. And frequently when I'm out walking with the dog or whatever, I see people who are quite sometimes agitated on their phones, blissfully unaware that we can all hear what they're shouting at their phone. They've got their earbuds in, the phone's in front of them. They are not looking where they're going, and they're in that little bubble.
Yeah, and you see it on the top deck of a bus, and you think, oh, come on, how can you be so lack self-awareness to have a loud conversation? You see it walking down the street. It doesn't matter there. It doesn't matter in a supermarket queue. It really matters when that individual blindly steps out in front of a bus or a truck, and the driver has to react like a fighter pilot to avoid seeing them.
Now, that stat you said about this time of year, you know, we're heading into the winter months, the whole question of people being appropriately lit, whether it's with reflective gear or whether it's with actual lights.
Yeah.
I mean, it would solve an awful lot of problems, I think.
Well, it should be just a regular habit. And it's a dark time of year, so wear bright coloured clothing. And that's pedestrians, it's cyclists, obviously. Cyclists have to be properly lit, and motorists always give out about it. But look, the landscape is what it is.
I mean, it doesn't seem to be a spec. You have to have an illumination front and rear. It doesn't say how many lumens have to be emitted by those lamps. And some of them are, as I said before, it's like the Glimmer Man back in the war.
Yeah, and I think the regulations are out of date. I mean, a bicycle has to have a light front and rear, but often people are using wearable lights. If you've got, if you're wearing a high-vis and you have a good quality light on an armband or front and rear.
A light on the back of your helmet.
And there's no light on the actual bike. Theoretically, you're committing an offence, but in reality, you're being very responsible. Likewise, you could have a couple of dim twickering lights with dodgy batteries that don't make a blind bit of difference. And in your dark clothing on a dark morning,
When I was riding to school, the lamp on the front of your bike was actually to kind of show you the road. Nowadays, it's a different function entirely. It's to make sure you are seen.
It's to make sure you're seen, yeah, and vitally necessary. And anybody who is a driver, it makes such a difference. A good quality high vis, the cyclist, the pedestrian is immediately visible to you. The guy in the dark jacket with the dim light, almost impossible to see. So we all have to be socially responsible. But I guess what I was going to say is, while we can give out about cyclists, and you will see them without lights, and you can give out about zombie pedestrians staring at phones, the agency of death is the car engine, or the truck or the bus. And in fact, in rural areas or in urban areas, it's often a truck or a bus. It's not a car as often as you might think, but it's the person
but
in charge.
But you can't
of the
avoid
engine.
What you can't see.
Well, true, but you know that the unpredictable can happen in an urban environment. You know that it's possible. So the greater burden of responsibility is on you. It's the drivers who have to slow down, even if everybody's at fault, even if the cyclists are the ones at fault. It's the drivers who have to take care, because they're the ones whose inattention will kill.
Sure. I mean, the vehicle is heavy. Mm. If it comes in contact with a scooterist, the scooter is going to come off worse, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and there's no point saying afterwards that the scooterist was poorly lit or wasn't paying attention. I mean, nobody cares about that when you get to the point where somebody has been hurt. Incidentally, again, back to the RSA's analysis of the injuries, over a 10-year period, you had about 2,800 hospital admissions for serious injury as measured by the sort of international casualty scale, the abbreviated injury scale. That compares to the rest of Europe, but what you can see is a 10% underreporting by Gardaí. And I think, interestingly, of those casualties, 40% had head injuries, and they stayed an average of 11 and a half days in hospital. So this is the stuff you don't see in the stats. Mm. When you read in a given year that 17 or 18 cyclists were killed, you think, oh, that's terrible. 10, 11 times that number were seriously injured. And in some cases, that can be life-changing. I mean, imagine somebody who's, come off a bike with a head injury, they spent 12 days in hospital before they came out. We don't know the rest of that person's story, but that is in all likelihood a life-changing event. And it doesn't show up in the stats at all. It's just missed in the headlines.
If jaywalking were to be made illegal, as in the United States, or socially unacceptable, as in many EU countries, our pedestrian casualties would be vastly reduced. Crossing against red lights and crossing at side street junctions while not looking out for vehicles turning in are rife in Dublin. That's from Kevin in Old Town.
Yeah, jaywalking is illegal. That's more of a trivia question than anything you notice in real life, but it is actually an offence to cross the road within 50 metres of a designated crossing. In other words, if there's a crossing within 50 metres of you, then you must use it. Theoretically, I'd say you could quiz a guard on that, he'd probably get it wrong. And I don't know that anybody has ever enforced it. It's a cultural thing, as you say, in European cities people obey it. But also, when you're designing urban areas, you have to be cognizant of that. You have to think what pedestrians want to do, what cyclists want to do. And you have to think in terms of line of desire. There's no point making a pedestrian take a 100-yard deviation to cross a road. They will not do it. So in your planning, you have to recognise that. And when you're driving, you have to recognise that. Pedestrians will cross at random places.
We have to talk about drivers not checking for cyclists when turning left. Mm. This week alone, I've witnessed at least three incidents where drivers had a cyclist on their left in a cycle lane, and the driver just turns into them, causing a crash. Drivers seem to think that all they have to do is put on an indicator and they have the right to plough in across the cyclist. Even more worrying is that these drivers are often professional drivers, vans, taxis, etc. This is a thorny one. This morning, actually, I had someone on my inside. and I stopped to let them pass on my inside on the cycle lane. This is on Camden Street. And they went on my outside.
And I was well, thinking, that wasn't me.
Kind of confusing because I was allowing, there was a scooter and a bike. The scooter carried on the cycle lane, you know, because I had paused to as I was turning left. The cyclist went on the outside.
Yeah.
And looked at me as if I had the two heads.
Yeah. And I, who knows, may have had his reasons or may have just been one of those moments of distraction, Pat. We're all guilty of them. When a cyclist does it, it tends to be very visible. Look, I cycled in the same route myself this morning. It is a bugbear. Motorists do have to check on the inside, particularly where there's lots and lots of flowing bicycles. In the motorist defence, you can be difficult to see, particularly if you're not lit and particularly on a misty, wet morning. You can be difficult to see. So I'd say that drivers have to look out for
cars. Another one here says, make high-vis jackets compulsory night and day. Remember the old campaign, be safe, be seen. That's from Vincent.
Yeah.
There's a reluctance about that, isn't there?
Yeah, well, we've said before, I don't like compulsory. I don't like the word compulsory.
Well, cyclists, and you are one, don't seem to like that. Everyone else on the road, you know, the motorist has to have insurance, has to be lit up, has to have tax, has to have all these things. Cyclists say, no, no, we want to live as if it's the 19th century.
Well, I don't think that's true. And I think it's more or less empirically proved by the international data, places in Australia and stuff like that who've done it. When you, for example, bring in a compulsory rule for helmets or for high-vis, what you think you're doing is making cycling safer. What actually happens, the collateral damage from that social policy, is what actually happens is that cycling numbers reduce. And paradoxically, that makes the cycling landscape a little bit less safe, not more safe. It may be counterintuitive, but empirically, that's what it says. So I'm all in favour of making these things voluntary, universal, culturally normal. But the moment you switch that to finger wagging and say, let's make it the law, it doesn't work as well as you think it do.
Seatbelts became compulsory. You know,
at manufacture, which was the first instance, yes. And there are, I mean, things like NCTs, for example, or bikes, or sorry, lights, the aforementioned lights. You do have to have lights. But there's a limit to what you can make compulsory for people before you start having...
another one here. If I get a serious injury by being hit by a car, which is at fault, I could claim big bucks. If I get a similar injury by getting hit by an e-scooter or a bike on the path, I can claim zero.
Well, that's wrong, in fact. And also, you can't claim big bucks. It's a story we might talk about another time. But the personal injury situation has improved tremendously.
Sure. We did a feature on it the other day. Yeah. I mean, the amounts paid out are down. They're still significant, though. If you've got a significant injury, which is, you know, a kosher one, not...
Absolutely.
A scam one. You deserve to be paid.
You can, in all instances, you can seek redress. It doesn't matter what your cause of injury was.
That I see vanishing into the middle distance, the guy on the black scooter in the black hoodie with no identification whatsoever, he knocks me down, knocks me over. How am I getting redressed Connor?
In theory, Pat, the same would apply to a pedestrian. A thuggish pedestrian who's grumpy gives you a shove of an evening and runs away. You wind up tripping and falling and hurting yourself. An incident like that, we're not suggesting that all pedestrians have registration numbers so that they can be tracked. I mean, the remedy is worse than the disease there, Pat.
But they can't get away that quickly. You know, they might decide to make a run for it. But by and large, the scooter guys are travelling at maybe 25, 30k. They can be gone in a jiffy.
As can the cyclists.
Indeed.
As can a fit young pedestrian, if you like. But I'm not sure what the remedy for that is going to achieve, bar making, you know, cycling suddenly a very bureaucratic thing that involves an insurance bill every year. People will just stop doing it, and that's not
another
what you want
problem
to
raised by a listener. The glare from oncoming lights, far too bright nowadays. I mean, the technology of lighting in cars has improved
it
dramatically.
Has, yeah, and the lumens are governed by EU regulations. So
even
though
if they appear brighter, they're not actually.
They're not actually, but they do tend to be high-mounted these days, with every second car on the road being a bloody SUV or SUV-shaped or just too large. So often, if you're driving a more conventional car, the headlights will feel like they're coming straight in the back windscreen, and that can be somewhat intimidating. If you're the cyclist, it can be a little bit intimidating, but the brightness is actually governed by law.
Now, this is one that I'm sure everyone who's used roundabouts in the last few years has seen. Please ask Connor, what kind of planning was involved when pedestrian crossings are within 20 metres of busy roundabouts? What a ridiculous situation. So the idea is you're whizzing around the roundabout at the appropriate speed limit, and you turn off at the turn, one of maybe many on the roundabout, And lo and behold, as soon as you turn into the next road, there's a traffic light, a pedestrian light.
Okay, and the reason for that is engineering and its reality. Because what's your alternative design? You might say, well, I want the pedestrians at least 50 metres clear of the roundabout. So I'm going to put the pedestrian crossing 50 metres away. Great, thinks you. What actually happens on a day-to-day basis, pedestrians ignore it and they walk straight across the road.
Sure,
at the
sure,
most
but
dangerous
I mean, you have a situation where someone has to brake rather suddenly, unsighted of this pedestrian crossing.
Yeah, I understand.
Now, if you're
that.
Using it every day, I mean, for example, there's a new set of lights at Glenageary roundabout, and I use it all the time, so I'm aware that there are these lights. But if you're a stranger and you're making your way, you round a bend and bang. There's someone crossing the road.
So maybe you can improve with better signage. But as I say, the design choice that's being made there is quite a deliberate one, because your alternative is to put the crossing further away. And that won't work. What actually happens is that pedestrians ignore all signage and they go straight across at the most dangerous point. So you have to design for sort of what realistically happens. I mean, the engineers will call that line of desire. It's very important when you're designing bicycle lanes, for example, because there are things that bicycles will do in defiance of the engineering. And there's no point wishing water would flow uphill. You have to design for what human behaviour realistically is.
Yeah, you may be familiar with the pedestrian lights at Donnybrook Fair in Donnybrook.
Yes,
and just about 50 metres away is another set of lights at Herbert Park, and people still walk between the two lights they cross the road.
Yeah, they will. What a pity we're designing for the Mark 1 human being, which is totally flawed and continues to be.
The other day I witnessed an electric scooterist careering down Parnell Street and running straight out in front of a bus which was turning left from Parnell Street. When will they be banned?
They will,
that texture.
Okay, they will not be banned. You could have told the exact same thing about a cyclist, and somebody probably did see something similar, but nobody's banning bikes. Everybody needs to behave better, for sure. And that certainly includes e-scooters and cyclists. But look, as I say, we're all people. A general improvement in the culture would be helpful.
Yeah, an increasing distraction is scooter and cyclists dressed all in black appearing from nowhere. Even if the drivers see them, it does take their attention off the road. Because you see, if they're not lit up or whatever and they're all in black, you see something moving in the corner of your eye. And then you have to peer to see them more clearly. But when in so doing, you're taking your eyes off what's in front of you.
Yeah, and you do have to be hyper alert as a driver in an urban area. And we're talking about cyclists there, but, you know, there could be any form of distraction. It could be a child. It could be a dog. It could be the door of a van swinging wide open. Any of these things could happen. So, as I say, it's the driver who's got to pay attention.
A final comment. Everything with motorists is mandatory, but not with cyclists. Fair play, please. That's from D. Anyway, Conor Faulkner, transport commentator and consultant to the RIAC. Thank you very much for joining us. Now,
the Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.